and welcome to, can you believe it, yet another episode of Let's Talk About.
Another one?
After a short break, another one. And another one, as my good friend Kendrick Lamar would say.
Yeah. So,
we've been away for a couple of weeks for various reasons, whether it be blocked up timetables or family emergencies. Or, you know, the sun rising where it normally sets. All these issues. But no matter what happens, we always come back to bring some sort of emotions into your life. It's never normally happiness we seem to hear from our reviews. It seems to be more pain and suffering. But alas, we are here. And by we, I mean me. And that is Elliot. And of course, my splendid co-host, Mr. Seb.
That's me. Hello.
That is indeed him. And of course, you're probably wondering what we're talking about. We're here to lift your spirits up. That is right, ladies and gentlemen. We are talking about the Rick Astley paradox itself. Up.
Yeah.
Now, there's probably many people here who have not seen Up. You know, it's a bit of an underground movie, in my opinion.
Yeah.
So, Seb, I didn't know if without sort of like spoiling any emotional parts of the movie. Could you give us a brief rundown of what this plot is? What would the audience be getting themselves into?
Well, I think even if you haven't seen the film, you've probably seen the image of the house with the balloons floating in the sky. It's quite an iconic image. The IMDb synopsis sums up pretty well. 78-year-old Carl Fredrickson travels to South America in his house equipped with balloons, inadvertently taking a young stowaway. So, we obviously gone on some adventures and stuff. Yeah, it's hard to kind of say anything without spoiling the kind of, I guess, the most well-known part of the film, which is the kind of montages at the beginning. Is there anything else I could say, do you think?
Ooh. I suppose you could say, what kind of film is this? Like, obviously we know it's animated, it's Pixar. What kind of emotions are we going to be feeling? Is this a comedy? Is this a drama? What's going on?
Oh, this is a laugh-out-loud documentary. No, so this has a very, very emotional beginning, which then turns into something, and then it becomes a bit of an adventure kind of movie. We see characters in this film. There's only a few like characters that we really spend time with who bounce off each other. As we said, it's a very stylized 3D animation. I was talking about this yesterday. Instead of the photorealism, they've gone for these quite cool characterized kind of people. Same with like the animals. There's lots of animals in this film, if you are an animal lover. There's lots of balloons as well, if you love helium. There's some suspense and tension in this film as well. So, there's nothing outrageous, nothing that would really, you know, upset a young child. But having not watched this since I saw it at the cinema, I think, as a teen, I don't think I've seen it as an adult, this was viewed very differently from myself. I don't know, what is your history with this film?
Well, I remember rushing to the cinema to see this, being a big fan of helium myself. I knew...
You must have floated there.
It was going to be something. Oh, did I? I squeaked all the way there as well.
Nice.
Yeah, I can't remember seeing this at the cinema, but I'm sure I did. I just can't remember it. But I have seen it a few times since. So this is a movie which I think... I would argue the older you get, the more you appreciate this film.
Yeah.
I would say, and this is a bold call, I know.
Oh, here
but
it
if
comes.
You were to get if you were to get a child, a teenager and an adult, and they walk into a bar, no. And sort of like get them to watch like all the Pixar movies and then get them to like rank them, like the greatest thing you could possibly do.
Yeah.
I reckon that Up would possibly be quite low on a child's list compared to some of the other movies that they could enjoy, like The Incredibles, like Finding Nemo, etc., etc. and cars, obviously. I think teens might have it, sort of like maybe in their top 10. But I think adults, most would have this quite high in their rankings.
Yeah.
I think it's a very, even though it has got some childish bits in it, I think it's a very adult movie in terms of the themes that are going on with it and the drama and the emotion. So I watched this a couple of weeks ago and I was like hooked all the way through.
Yeah.
It's a very, because I think the start is so important to the rest of the movie that this is one of those ones where even though I think most people would know the start, I'm not going to risk saying anything other than it is full of emotion. It sets up the entire movie.
Yeah.
And in some ways, it's really beautiful. So yeah, I love this movie. And before we properly go into spoilers, there's a few things we'll discuss before then. I would highly recommend you watch it. If you've not seen it already, give it a watch.
Oh, I might put it on then. Yeah, I must echo my co-host's opinions here. This was a very beautiful movie, both visually and in terms of how it made me feel. Visually, very, very cool, very nice designs. They go to a place called Paradise Falls, which, as it kind of talks about, is very visually pleasing. The music is very nice. There's a certain lick that they apply through a lot of the different pieces, even in some of the more suspense stuff with a different kind of tone to it, which I thought was very cool. The voice acting, again, a Pixar film. You've got some of the oldies kind of in there. You've got, what's his name? John Ratzenberger. Recognises his face all the time. His face, his voice. But the main characters, Carl is obviously perfect. Russell, his voice is brilliant. Christopher Plummer was the voice of Charles Muntz. I didn't realise until the credits. He was the dad in Sound of Music. He's also in Knives Out, for anyone who remembers that. Yeah, so that was all good. So yeah, on all those kind of areas, a very, very well-rounded film. If you are older, this will probably affect you more than if you were a kid. I do think if you're a kid, there's a lot of stuff in here, like the dogs and everything is very cute. There's a lot of humour there. Squirrel! The birds and Russell and everyone is very fun. But I do think you're right. A lot of the themes to this, you know, are very kind of mature and you appreciate a lot more once you've lived at least part of a life. It'd be interesting if you were like kind of retired age, like watching this, what the effect be any different. But yeah, those are my thoughts.
I appreciate your thoughts.
Oh.
And I do definitely have to agree with the music. The music is on point. Oh. And I think, I would say Disney, as in the animation studios, do the best songs in the biz. But I think Pixar do the best score.
Yeah, I think I agree with you there.
I think, because like when you think about like how amazing this music is, I was going to say arguably the best in Pixar, but then I remember, oh no, there's Monsters, Inc. I remember, oh, there's Monsters University. Oh, there's The Incredibles. Oh, there's Toy Story.
Yeah.
I was like, wah! There's so much. It's so good. So yeah, really, really good. Another thing I noticed is, and don't ask me to pinpoint anything, because I can't, but I could put this in, I think, for non-spoilers, because then people who watch it can keep an eye out for it.
Oh, okay.
Is, I started noticing different bits happen throughout, and I was like, oh, that's just like Star Wars. Oh, that's just like Star Wars. And then it kept happening, and I was just like, surely this is just my brain going crazy, because how is Up anything like Star Wars? But then something happened near the end where it was literally Star Wars. Now that bit I will highlight in spoilers. And I'm like, oh, has this been deliberate all the way through? And as soon as that happened, I went to my notes and I was like, there has been Star Wars references. And then my brain was like, but what were they? And I can't remember what they were, but throughout the entire movie, I was like, that's just like Star Wars.
Oh.
And I kept thinking I was going crazy. And then it literally it showed me something at the end, which was literally Star Wars.
And I'm yes, like, oh, okay. There's a trivia on here, so I've realised what you were talking about now. Yeah.
Oh, okay, cool. Well, in which case, you know, if you've seen the movie or you're just crazy, you can wait till spoilers and we can see what that is. But, you know, that just came into my mind. I thought that was interesting.
Hmm.
I thought characters in this movie, very good. And character development, very, very good. Amongst, like, the whole cast, really. But I do think my favourite character is indeed the main dog.
Doug.
Yeah, that's the one. Doug the dog. I think he's pretty phenomenal. He's got some great quotes. I'll bring them out later, I'm sure.
Yes.
But, yeah. Really, I don't know what else I can say on Up without spoiling anything other than it's an amazing movie. But as amazing as it is, it's not one I'd rush back to watch just because it does take a lot out of you emotionally.
That's the thing, isn't it? It is such a quite a heavy film. Even though it obviously gets lighter, there's still parts of it that get you, and it's just like, I need a bit of time. So
I would argue the film goes from a lot of emotion to kind of chill, to haha, that's funny, to stress,
yeah,
to kind of chill, haha, that's funny, to a lot of emotion. Basically, it's stress with bread and butter.
Pretty.
With the butter being haha, that's funny, and packed with emotion either side as well. So, you know, that's my analogy. So if you've not seen it, go do it. But any final thoughts, Seb, before spoilers?
I think everything else will be spoilery, or it'll be based on what we talk about in spoilery. I want to mention the run-up of films before and after this, just to kind of get a snapshot of where we are in Pixar time, which is always fun to do. So we'll do that maybe after.
Sounds amazing. Well, you've heard it here first. This is, are we saying, one of the greatest Pixar movies? Would it be in your top 10 Pixar movies?
Would it be my top 10? It's an interesting one, because a lot of people say about how amazing the start is, but does the rest of the film match up? I think the rest of the film is still excellent, because I think that the other big hitters that we have seen or that we've at least talked about are kind of around this time as well. Stuff like, you know, Ratatouille and Wall-E and stuff like that. This is easily up there, along with even like Toy Story, I think. It's probably top 5 for me, maybe.
Yeah, that's cool. I was just having a look at the movies. Apparently, there's 29 Pixar movies in total.
Ooh.
I would say for me, this is definitely top 10. I was just running through it. Yeah, I think top 10. I think so. But again, it's hard to compare, because I think a lot of the Pixar movies I could quite happily watch over and over again. Whereas this one, I couldn't.
That's
so
true.
Who knows? Who knows? A lot of things to weigh up there, but sometimes that's just for salsa.
Yeah.
Anyway, that was our non-spoilery review of Up. Oh, I suppose one other thing I should say is one other great thing that comes with Up is, of course, the Rick Astley paradox.
Yeah.
Where, of course, he says he's never going to give you up, which is quite sad because sometimes you'd like to watch the movie. But then he also says he's never going to let you down.
Hmm.
But in a way, he's let you down because he's not given you up. So
yeah, because if you ask him for a copy of the movie Up, it's like he can't give you up, but he can't let you down. So the world will implode.
Yeah. Now, some people would say, well, clearly the song isn't about Up. And I'm like, well, how do you not know that that's not Rick Astley's favourite film? And then some would just simply argue, but wasn't the song written 20, 25 years before Up was released? And to them I say, shut up. Anyway, we're now going to move on to spoilers. If you haven't seen the movie, we recommend you go and see it. But if you have seen the movie or you're just a crazy person, please feel free to continue. I was going to say watching, but if you're watching, I'd be a little bit scared. But ideally, listening for my own health and safety, I think.
Okay.
I would like to start off really by talking about what else could you talk about other than the introduction?
Oh, I wondered if it was going to come up.
Say, I was gonna say quotes from Doug, but we should probably talk about the introduction first. Where do we start with the start? That's the question I have.
It's a very, very efficient storytelling because I forgot really that actually the intro isn't the montage. The montage is after, because we're introduced to Carl as a kid. He's watching the movie of Charles Muntz, who is like a kind of explorer guy. He's then discredited because of his work. He goes off to prove everyone wrong. We see this off the influence as Carl, but then he meets Ellie. Ellie, of course, is also a fan of Charles Muntz, so they meet together. He barely says anything. She's very chatty. And we then see them hang out, and then that kind of leads into their life together, basically. We see them grow up. We see them, like, start dating. They get married. I like the shot in the church when they get married. The difference between the two families always brings me a chuckle. And I do love the scene where they get the house, because it looks like, is it her house when she was a kid? Then they just do it up.
I'm unsure. I don't know.
Yeah, I can't remember. But the colour choice is quite cool. It's all like the different rooms and different panels are different kind of colours. I like when they're painting the mailbox and he's accidentally resting his hand on. He's a bit worried it's ruined it. And then she puts one on as well. So that was quite nice. I'm not going to list every single thing that happens. But yeah, it starts off very cheery. I like seeing the different animals in the clouds. And then they start seeing babies. So then they start getting the baby room. And then that's when this film decides it's going to do something different.
Nah.
Yeah.
Is that you asking me to say the different thing?
What's the different thing, Elliot?
Well, in my notes, I've put this. I've put really cute start until ... And then I've put and then until crying face. And then I've put and then until oh no.
Yeah.
Because it's a very quick whack whack wallop with this. So she clearly has a miscarriage, which for the first 5 minutes of a Pixar movie is quite a bold move.
Yeah.
And that's sad. And then she gets ill.
Yep.
And then she dies.
Yep.
And then that's the end of a montage. And you just get a grumpy old man alone. And people are trying to make a new estate where he's living. So they're doing it all around him.
Yeah.
Which is quite funny. And then he makes a little hiccup. And now they're trying to kick him out. So he's literally lost a baby, his wife, his house, and pretty much his life.
Yeah, it is very hard. It's a lot all in one go. It's shot beautifully. Where we... That transition from, I think it's when they're decorating the baby room to they're at the hospital and it's clear that they can't have kids, I think. And you then just see, obviously, it's devastating, right? And I think a lot of people watching this would have experienced something connected to that. And I think that would have affected a lot of people. I wasn't exactly crying at this point, but I was very emotional at this point. And we see them kind of, you know, getting to grips with that. They're like, kind of getting through life, and then they decide they want to save up, so they want to go to Paradise Falls. There's a nice like montage of them putting coins in the thing, and then something happens, like he crashes the car, he, you know, they break a leg or something, and they keep having to break it open and get the money for it. And then yeah, they're getting older, she gets sick, and there's that cute thing of where she's in the bed and he sends over the little thing on the balloon like she did when they were kids, because like, the music's getting quieter and slower at this point as well. And honestly, when it cut to the funeral, I proper just like broke down in tears. Like, I haven't cried like that since I watched Band of Brothers last summer. That is, yeah, that really destroyed me, that did. And you know it's coming.
Did it affect you more now you're married?
I think it did. I think seeing their life together and then seeing them obviously not being able to do what they wanted to was very affecting. And then just seeing it slowly happen, and then it's just him. Like, yeah, when you're on your own, obviously that's quite sad, but when you do have someone, the thought of them being alone is very, very tough to deal with.
So it's a very emotional ending, very powerful ending, start, introduction, any of those words. And it really sets the mood for the whole movie, because really, now you've got this grumpy old man, and the rest of this movie is kind of his character development.
Yeah.
So that's when we get introduced to a young boy.
Russell.
That's the one. He's amusing.
He's adorable.
He's okay. My favourite bit is, because I think we could talk about this movie and all the characters and everything for like hours.
Yeah.
But my favourite bit is when he's somehow on the porch.
Yeah.
And then the house has been lifted up. And then he's trying to come in the house. He's like, please, can I come in? Because they're like in the air. And he's like, no. But he slams the door.
Like, I love that whole sequence. Because he's, the whole thing's great. The way they set up like the, all the canisters and then the balloons and all the raising up and everything like that. And he's like, he sits down, it's all calm, and he hears a knock at the door, which is like, oh, that's terrifying. And then when he opens it and Russell's there, and he says, no, you can't come in. And there's just that look on Russell's face of like, oh, okay, what do I do then? But obviously he lets him in. It's, yeah, that was quite fun. I like the callback later on when Doug was outside as well. I was like, I was under your porch because I love you. Can I come in?
That's such a great quote.
Yeah.
Oh, I used to say that so much when I was a kid. I was under your porch because I loved you. You've got some other great quotes from him. You've got, please, oh, please, oh, please be my prisoner.
Yeah, I love that one. I like the, I have just met you and I love you.
I really think that they got Doug spot on. The walk, how they would talk.
Yeah.
It really is amazing. But no, it's really cool. Of course, we have Kevin as well.
Yep.
Kevin the bird. He's really cool. All on an adventure to try and find the perfect spot for them to hike. And I think the whole journey, like I said, is pretty cool. Because like, I think I summarized it so well earlier with it's like, it's emotion, then it's, oh, it's funny. And then it's stress when they finally meet, what's his face?
Charles.
Xavier.
Yep.
Yep. And then, like, it's all, like, fun and games again. And then it's, like, emotional. Because that was, like, the other thing. It's really a sandwich, Jim. It's, like, when he decides he's going to come back home and he's going to, like, look after what's-his-face and he's there to, like, put the badge.
Yeah, that was really nice scene.
On Russell's thing. And I was there just like,
ooh. Yeah, I was emotional at that scene. Because he gives him the little pin that he had from Ellie rather than the actual one, and that was like, yeah, that meant a lot to him.
Oh, it was too much. And like, when it was like, what like pushed him to like do that was when he was looking through the adventure book again, and he saw like their whole life, and we're seeing it again, and then she's like, you gotta make your own adventure now without me. And it's just like, oh,
that was really nice, because he's got tears in his eyes and there's that melancholy of obviously it's sad, but he's looking back at happy memories. And it's that question of, you know, which is it better to have never loved or to have loved and lost? And yeah, that thing of like, thank you for the adventure, now have your own one. It really sets him straight. Because one of the pieces of trivia on here is about how Carl and Charles are kind of like mirrors of each other in a certain way. Yeah, according to Pete Doctor, they were designed to be mirrors of each other, right down to their names. They've both suffered a tremendous personal loss. So for Carl, it's his wife, Ellie. For months, it's his good name, reputation. They're both obsessed with an object from their past. For Carl, it's the house. For months, it's Kevin. The difference between the two is that over the years, months' obsession has made him bitter and paranoid to an extreme, because he doesn't believe that Carl was there for any other reason than to be steal whatever. Whereas, so then months represents what Carl would likely have become had he not met Russell and Doug. Because, yeah, he is a bit old and bitter, isn't he? He's not. Obviously, the people are trying to buy his house, so, you know, they're not really that nice. But even with Russell, he's very short with him, doesn't want to give him the time of day. But we see that slowly eroded throughout the film. And it's just so important, isn't it? Because you have all these things happen to you, and obviously it's not fair. But if that makes you become a kind of bitter, paranoid person, I thought, yeah, that was especially because it was his hero as well. That was, like, quite quite powerful, I think, quite effective use of mirroring of character there.
I very much agree. Yeah, I really don't know what else to say about this movie. Again, like I said earlier, I think we could talk for ages about every single sort of like character, the jokes, but I think everything's kind of, do I say it's balanced quite well when it's just an emotional roller coaster throughout? I don't know, but I wouldn't have it. I think it needs that much emotion for the rest of a movie to kind of make sense and blend.
Yeah.
Yeah, cool. We're in agreement.
because I was thinking about that as well. It's like the emotional peak is so high and it's at the start of the film, whereas normally you'd have that like at the end. But then you do get those moments at the end. You get the stuff where he gives Russell the badge. You've got the stuff where he's able to finally say goodbye to the house, because I know it represents Ellie, but he can finally like kind of do other stuff. So, yeah, you kind of have the whole film like that. So that, and I think the humour really works. The humour doesn't take away from anything either. If this was like a Marvel film, there'd be some horrible thing, and then like they'd probably use a joke right after. But I think, yeah, they balanced it very well. And the characters are just funny, and the animals are funny, not just making up jokes.
Did you say you had something on the Star Wars references?
Yeah, so I picked up on this at the time. I didn't think of it until you mentioned it. There's a scene where all the dogs, who can talk, by the way, are in little aeroplanes attacking Russell. And obviously it becomes a literal dog fight, which is very fun. But the dogs refer to each other as Grey Leader, Grey 1 and Grey 2. So that was a nod to A New Hope.
And I feel like there was one or two other things as well. I also could have made that up. But the bit where I was like, oh, this must have been deliberate, was, I don't know if you noticed that grumpy guy took little boy to to the cinema to see
Star
A New
Wars.
Hope.
Yeah.
Yeah, which was really cool.
Because I was like, when is this set?
I don't know. But of course they have healing balloons, don't they? So makes
sense. I just realised here, because in New Hope, it's Red Leader, isn't it? Gold Leader. But here, because they call Grey Leader, it jokingly refers to the myth that dogs cannot see colours. that's why it's Grey Leader, which is quite fun. Apparently, when the dogs start shooting, the guns sound like the blast from an X-Wing fighter. So I didn't realise that myself. I watched maybe a documentary or something about the ending with Charles Muntz, how there was different ways he was going to die. They were maybe going to redeem him. They changed the ending because I think he was going to be in the house as it falls, but they changed that because, you know, Ellie is symbolized by the house. They didn't want it to kind of be linked to the death. Interestingly, on here, it mentions that Charles is the sixth Disney villain to fall to his death in an animated movie. Can you name the others?
Are they all Disney?
Yes.
Okay. Sixth. Oh, no. right. Yeah, easy. No, I can't. Hang on. I'm sure.
I thought of
one. I'm picturing them. You thought of one. Well, okay. Oh, you say Disney character or Disney villain?
Disney villain.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
I thought of Mufasa.
Oh, I was about to say, yeah.
Oh, well, Scar fell, didn't he?
No, he was killed by the hyenas.
Oh, yeah, of course. I don't. You know what? I would have loved this if I wasn't on the podcast, because I could sit and think. Yeah. But I feel like that's boring entertainment. So why don't you tell us, and then I can be annoyed at myself.
Okay, well, the first one is pretty early. If anything, the earliest.
Oh, what, Snow White?
Yeah, the Wicked Queen, apparently. I don't remember that myself.
I don't.
Then, I guess this is in order. Oh, no, it's not. Or maybe it kind of is, though. So, then we've got Ratigan in The Great Mouse Detective.
Right, yeah.
Because we watched that, didn't we? And that was quite... I remember that kind of standing out. McLeach in The Rescuers Down Under.
Oh, okay.
Again, don't remember that. Gaston, Beauty and the Beast. I remember that.
Oh, yeah, of course. That's the one I was picturing.
Yeah. Frollo in The Hunchback of Notre Dame. Mm-hmm. I don't remember that.
I've seen that, like, once, so...
Interestingly, he's the first Pixar villain to do so. It's also noteworthy that Lucifer the Cat in Cinderella fell to his apparent death, but was alive and well in the direct-to-video sequel. We also have Maleficent in Sleeping Beauty falls as well, but only after being mortally wounded with a sword. That's true. So the big one is Clayton in Tarzan falls after fighting Tarzan, but it's not the fall that kills him. It's actually the being hanged by the vines, which is very terrible.
That's beautiful.
It's good, though.
Thank you so much for sharing that with that. That's a nice, cheery way to end our podcast.
You're welcome.
But anyway, those are our thoughts on Up. So, of course, we would like to hear your thoughts. So, how can we hear their thoughts?
Oh, well, if you learn the computer badge, then you can... I like that in the credits, where they do all the different activities, and then it links into like the art and stuff. If you have a mouse, you can access your email and send us an email at letstalkabout2022@hotmail.com. Alternatively, you can message us on a little app called Instagram at lta.podcast.
But of course, we're not what we're all here for. We're here to find out what movie we're watching next. So that's right, it's now time to spin the wheel. And you're not going to be able to hear this because you're on the phone to me now.
Oh, no.
But I know, and I'm using my phone to spin said wheel. But I'll tell you what it's going to be. It's going to be a great movie. Some would argue... Oh, no, it's not. Well, no. Here's a great movie. I was going to say it's the one that's ever best live-action remake.
Oh,
but instead
Aladdin.
It's going to the one that... Yeah, but then it went off that, and it's gone for the one that's got the most okay live-action remake.
What was after Aladdin? That is...
Beauty and the Beast.
Ah!
Is going to be the next movie. Ooh. So that'll be lovely. So, of course, thank you ever so much for listening. We hope you can join us. I don't know if we'll be talking about Beauty and the Beast next time. It might be something different.
Well,
so keep an eye out for that.
It's interesting you mentioned that, because I haven't seen the live-action one, so I'm wondering if it's worth doing both.
You want to do a double-double?
Maybe.
That's madness. It is a good remake, to be fair. I do like it.
Yeah.
Okay, so we might have that double-double, but no matter which way around we do it, of course, we invite all of you who are listening to be our guest as we watch it.
He's done it again.
Thank you. But of course, you want to make sure that, you know, you at home, you're leaving this podcast with just something that's going to get you through. We know that life is terrible sometimes, and we're here to bring you joy and, you know, just a bit of hope. So, Seb, how can you inspire our listeners today?
The wilderness must be explored. Ka-ka! Rah!
Thank you for that touching sentence. And we will see you all next time.
Bye-bye.